The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Loki. Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki Season 2 is...
marvelous.
Great.
And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki Season 2. Now streaming only on Disney Plus.
You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
Hello and welcome to Absent Minded, 1st of April edition, and it's no fool's day for us here at HabsEyesOnThePrize as we have gone independent and the transition into the new site seems to have been going very well. We are here to talk about the Player of the Month for March, and we have a huge lineup today. We got a complete line. We're only missing the goalkeeper, really. And we got, of course, the fugitive, the impersonator. He's now known in the Slack channels. The one and only, and I don't know what name he has right now, but we know him as Anton Rosegård. Thank you for joining me, Anton.
Thank you. Last I looked at my own name in the Slack channel, it was Odie Cleghorn, because I'm also breaking records, just like him.
On the other hand, we also have the Swedish hater, the one that Anton usually impersonates, Matt Drake.
Yes, sir. And it's not that I'm a Swedish hater. It's that I have a problem with like certain members of your culture who like to defraud the elderly. I think his name is Antoine or something like that. I can't remember, but he changes his name a lot. It's what fraudsters tend to do, because they want to try to confuse you, and they want to make sure nobody knows who they are. So that's really my problem with Sweden, is that you guys tend to defend these people constantly. So I'm watching you.
There we have it. And we have Jared Book, who's part of the original four, really. And Jared, the man who can now tell dad jokes, even if he did it before.
Yeah, lots of dad jokes. If you don't like puns, you should stop following me on Twitter. Just gonna throw that out there.
You're gonna lose like 1500 followers now.
Yeah, probably. No, I think those people have already left, to be honest.
Yeah, all right.
I was gonna say that Matt isn't a Swedish hater, he just really, really likes Jordan Dumais.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And the other thing that I wanted to say is that I don't think Odie Cleghorn broke records, I think he was just the first one to set all of them.
Yeah, that's true. But then he broke them, right? Someone has to have had the records before.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe that's true. But yeah, go Odie. He's no Sprague Ribbonsohn, though.
And last but not least, we have the Dobler Prospects Q guy. We got Hadi Kalakesh here, because we are going to talk a little bit about prospects. Hadi, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely, no problem. Excited to speak about Lane Hudson again for another 30 minutes, as it usually goes. So we
have a lot to talk about. We're going to go through, and we're going to become more regular, not only the bottom 6 minutes that Matt is driving all on his own. He's number two in Vietnam, so if anyone from Vietnam listens, make sure to tell your friends to start following us on that channel as well, so we become number one. Looking at it, though, we're going to start with the name that Adi just tossed out for no good reason at all. Obviously, Lane Hudson is the player of the month and probably player of the season. He should have been in the Harvey Baker Award nomination, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely outstanding to me that the NCAA determined that there's three better prospects than him in the NCAA. All jokes aside, I think that it was pretty tight with the names that were there, but for me, a player who has cracked the top three of all time, you know, draft plus one defenseman scoring in the NCAA, I think it's a no-brainer. Cale Makar, when he won his Hobie Baker in 2018-19, he had 49 points in 41 games. Hudson's at 48 points in 38 games. So he's got three more games to catch Kale Makar's Hobie Baker winning season. Now, obviously, in that season, there was a lot less competition. One of the runners-up was Jimmy Schultz. This year, you've got Logan Cooley and Matthew Nyes, Adam Fantilli, Jimmy Snuggerud, who didn't even make the cut. Guys like Luke Hughes, who didn't even make the top 10 for the Hobie Baker. So, you know, it's, I get that the competition is a lot tighter and the SAA has gotten better, but still, I mean, it's just outstanding to me that a guy who is top three all time for scoring among defensemen his age in the SAA, for him not to be in the running for the Hobie Baker in the top three, it's just, I don't get it at all.
Jimmy Schultz, the Canadians development camp invite.
Yep, he was.
Yeah. And Anton, we haven't really seen a snub like this since Erik Karlsson was snubbed for Doughty, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
The whole thing, I wonder how much of the voters' process, and it's kind of weird that all three nominees came from the Big Ten also. But having said that, I wonder how much of them is like, oh, we'll just give it to Lane next year. Because odds are he'll be back and the other three probably will not. Although,
yeah,
Cooley probably will be, but depends what Arizona wants to do and if they start actually having players on the roster.
Can I just ask you, Hadi? I understand the nominations of Fantilli and Cooley, but Matthew Nyes, is he really that good? Like, does Toronto really have something there, or is he just like, is it just that he has scored
the hits from Toronto?
No, but is it just that he has scored a lot of game-winning goals?
It can't be scoring because Sean Farrell scored more than he did in the NCAA. You'd have to put Farrell in there instead of Nyes.
Yeah, but the competition, you know, in the Big Ten versus the ECAC, yeah, where he's facing Colgate and you know, Cornell and stuff like that. Like it's a different league, right? But the thing is, Matthew Nyes has genuinely been really good in the NCAA. I don't know if he projects as a top six forward in the NHL. There's a lot of things from his game that make me think that he's more the type of guy who's going to oscillate between, you know, a low-end second liner or a high-end third liner type of thing, a bit like Alex Kerfoot, for example. You know, that's the kind of player I can see him mold as in the NHL. But what he's been doing in the NCAA this year for Minnesota, you know, it doesn't show on the scoring records, but he has been the main play driver on that line. It's just been outstanding.
Indeed. And what kind of projection do we have for Lane Hutson? There was, I mean, I remember you telling me, Hadi, if he was, a couple of inches taller, he would go in the top 10.
Oh, for sure.
And in a redraft, he obviously would anyway. But what can you tell us? What are the expectations of Lane Hutson coming into the summer and development camp? And then for next year when he plays it in a maybe an even bigger role on his team?
As much as I absolutely love Lane Hutson, I would be blown out of the water if he makes the NHL next year. I'm almost 100% certain he's going back to BU for at least another year, maybe two. Just to kind of round out his profile, because there are still some defensive lackings, mainly kind of sprouting from his skating deficiencies. His pivots are still a bit slow. He does get caught up. You know, he does a good job of keeping a mental map of his surroundings, but his feet can't keep up with a guy who's fast enough or big enough to get around him. So, you know, there's still those deficiencies. And until that's rectified, I don't see him really gelling to an NHL lineup as he is right now. But the ceiling with Hutson is pretty much limitless. I mean, the amount of offensive skill and intelligence that he displays on a regular basis, shift by shift, he's genuinely been Boston's best player. He's pretty much been the Hockey East's best player overall. You know, he led in points, that's one thing, but he's genuinely been just every shift. He's constantly creating things. He can just materialize scoring chance out of nothing, and he sees a game three steps in advance. For me, if you work out his skating issues and his defensive limitations and kind of surround that with kind of uplifting his skill even more, you know, bringing his puck handling one step up, you know, improving his shot, that kind of thing, you could be looking at a top pair defender in the NHL. But there's a lot of ifs there. I think that the step from the USHL to the NCAA was kind of one that was predictable in terms of how he would translate. Now, it's a different ballgame to make the NHL. The style is completely different. So, yes, the NCAA is a big step up in terms of competition, in terms of you know, pace of play and all that. But Hudson, I think, was always equipped for that. What's going to be even tougher is how he handles the chaos and the physicality of the NHL or even the AHL. That's really, for me, going to be the kind of the stepping stone that'll be the hardest to overcome. But so far, Hudson's overcome every single obstacle in his route on his way to greatness. So, you know, I wouldn't count him out, but there are still a lot of ifs in his game that need to be kind of ironed out.
I have a question for Hattie, parts of two here. I always had this theory that smaller players that are really, really good, and you know, Cole Caulfield falls into that category, Sean Farrell, and obviously Lane Hudson as well. They've always been smaller than everyone else. Yeah. So as they move up levels, they kind of are not that it's easy to adjust, but when you have that elite skill set, it's kind of like, yeah, I'm smaller. Xavier Simoneau is another example of that, of just somebody who's always been smaller and just deals with it. But if he had this season before the draft, where teams could see him adjust the NCAA, there's no chance he falls to 62, right?
Oh, no chance at all. I think a lot of teams are betting on, you know, the idea of him facing 6 foot plus 24-year-olds, you know, being something that he wouldn't be able to handle. And he's handled it wonderfully and he's been thriving. But yeah, I've mentioned this multiple times. You know, when you're smaller than everyone else your whole career, you develop competitive advantages. You develop the tools that you need to circumvent your lack of size. And so when you get to the NHL and you're facing bigger guys, it's nothing new. The issue is with Hudson is that he's develop the tools that work right now against guys who, you know, 50% of the time right now, the forwards he's facing in the NCAA off the rush are either not big enough or not fast enough to get around him. But as soon as you do have those two elements, let's say he comes up against Jimmy Snuggerud or Logan Cooley, those guys have either the speed or the size or both, the wingspan in general, to be able to get around him pretty easily. So that's a kind of level of play he's going to be facing in the NHL, especially if, you know, he develops his skill set even more and really kind of manifests himself as a potential top pair defender. If you're a top pair defender, you're facing top lines, and that's going to be the scary part for Hudson. There, you know, to a certain extent, it is definitely true that when you're smaller than everyone else, you do develop some competitive advantages, and Hudson certainly has. But there are still some elements of his game that realistically, you know, he does need to develop that further to be able to handle NHL competition. But since he's so adaptive as a player, his adaptability is really impressive. I think he's going to figure it out, especially with Adam Nicholas working on him, who's pretty much the best person to be handling someone like Lane Hudson, because his specialty is in developing edge work and explosivity out of pivots. And, you know, he's really, really good. Adam Nicholas is really good at working with guys who've got great hockey sense. And Hudson certainly has that. He's, you know, Nicholas's specialty is taking someone who's smart and making their body be able to keep up with their brain. So if he's able to continue doing what he's doing with Hudson, who's already shown some improvements in the areas I mentioned, I mean, if he keeps on this track, I would be very surprised if we're not looking at an NHL defender. It's just a matter of where he ends up in the lineup.
Yeah, basically what you're saying is we have to read a lot into the 7 games that next year's World Juniors.
And that absolutely, that's exactly what I'm saying. You got
nothing else matters except for
exactly. You got it.
If all he had to do, if literally the only thing that they asked him to do was come up to the NHL tomorrow and just carry the puck and transition through the neutral zone and gain the line, I think he could do it. I think he could play in the show tomorrow. Like Hattie, I'm not even going to go back over anything that Hattie just said.
I agree. Like,
with when he's shaking and baking on the way to the blue line, it is a sight. He had that goal. Who are they playing against? I forget. I got a clip of it on my Twitter, though, where he's like coming up towards the blue line and he's just shoulder faking the shit out of anybody trying to check him. And they can't put a stick on him. It's amazing what he can
might have been transition. Against Cornell. But yeah, no, you're right. If the only thing he was tasked with doing in the NHL, if he was able to just hop on the ice for a transition and then hop off, you have an NHL top pair defender. Yeah. The issue is everything that surrounds that. You know, when he's going to be facing defensive zones faceoffs, when he's going to be retrieving pucks in his own end with two forecheckers closing in on his back. Like, that's the part. Those are the parts that kind of worry me with Hudson. Which is why I'm all for keeping him in the NCAA for as long as possible to have these things developed to a level where he's ready to just jump in the NHL right away and play.
And then going they from
so instead of a too. Instead of a like face off, can get afford off the guy.
No, and going from one prospect in taken in the second round, we're going to another taken in the third, and it is obviously another puck carrying defender, Adam Engström, who's had a fantastic playoffs and end of the regular season, but really stood out in the playoffs. He stood out so much. So Robert Olsson actually acknowledged him along with the fans as Rögle's best player in the playoffs. Anton, obviously Adam plays for Rögle, and you've seen him live. You've seen some of the bad performances live.
Yeah, exactly. He didn't have a great night when you and me went to Catena Arena to watch him. But, you know, after that, that was back in the end of January, I think. And after that, he really picked it up and he really found a new level of play. And it's just impressive. He's a first-year senior player. And Rögle didn't have the easiest season coming off that CHL win, the first tournament they really won ever. So it was kind of a hangover for them. But yeah, in the playoffs, he was really lighting it up and really showing the way for his team. And without him, I don't think Rögle would have done as well as they actually ended up doing in the
First, they took out Emil Heinemann's Leksand, and then they brought one of the favorites to win it all, Skellefteå, into a game six where they fell through. They were actually, they held a 2-0 lead deep into game five, and in the last 10 minutes there, I think they lost the whole series. Hadi, you were highest on Emil on Adam Engström. In the top 25, under 25. How surprised are you of his season?
Very. And that's given, you know, having been able to, you know, make a full YouTube scouting report on him right after the draft, you know, right before we voted on the top 25, under 25. It's just outstanding to me what he's been able to do in the SHL this year. I thought he would spend the year in the J20 this year.
And, I think everyone did.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just, it's so impressive to see the way that he's able to move with the puck, the way that he's able to carry it out of his own, the intelligence and decision-making, the meticulousness of his choices in the offensive zone. You know, he thinks things through. He's not playing thoughtlessly. Sometimes you can see it in the defensive zone when, you know, he has to focus on switching assignments and stuff like that. Like, sometimes he will kind of look a bit thoughtless and get confused, but in general, his game has developed so much since his draft year as well. You know, the clips that I saw, the film that I had to work off of for my scouting report, I saw some flashes of what we see consistently now. And it's really impressive for me. Especially in the playoffs, he just came into his own. And, you know, when you've got the opposing team's coach lauding you as the best team, unprompted, no one asked him who was the best team on Rögle. He just said it. He was just like, yeah, the Adam Engström was fantastic. It just speaks to the level of play that he's been able to elevate himself into, you know, as the season went on. And I think it really stems from the amount of effort he puts in night in, night out to perform, to be in his top shape. And, you know, I believe that it was his head coach who said that he's, you know, the last guy off the ice. He constantly stays an extra 30 minutes to work on stuff. Like, these things are intangibles that can really make a difference. An extra 30 minutes a day can really change a prospect. So he's doing fantastic right now.
He's obviously, compared to Mattias Norlander, in a lot of ways by many people online, and they're miles apart in their development. Obviously, Norlander didn't play in SHL at this level, at this age even. And also, but what always strikes me when we talk about Engström and Norlander in the same sentence is that Roger Rönnberg said, I'm working on teaching Norlander to play poker, when to fold and when to go all in. And Engström doesn't really need that.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to be taught that. He already plays poker.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So the things that Engstrom needs to develop are more along the puck skills and defensive awareness kind of lane. Whereas Norlander was extremely chaotic, but so supremely skilled. And I don't see that in Engstrom. Engstrom is a lot more calculated than Norlander was, and he's less skilled than he is. So
I'm going to bring up something from an article that is about to be released, hopefully comes out this weekend. But obviously I spoke not only to Robert Olsson after the playoffs finished for Rögle, but also to Cam Abbott. And he says that Engstrom has bought in to work on the things that might not be as flashy, might not be as funny to work with in order to benefit the team. And he also stipulates quite clearly that he wouldn't have played him if he was just there to play cool. He Abbott is there to win games. He plays the best player possible, and in the end, that was Adam Engstrom.
Yeah, he absolutely deserved a shot, and he's been making really good work of it. So yeah, I'm extremely impressed with Engstrom. He's going to be higher than he already was in my rankings at the next top 25 under 25.
I think it goes for all of us, except for Matt, who obviously doesn't really like Swedish defenders or European defenders.
The issue is with the top 25 under 25 is there's only like 15 guys that I want to move up in my rankings, and there's not enough room to move all of them up. So, and I think that's going to be a thing that when we sit down. We're going to have a lot of guys that are going to be lower than we want them to be.
And especially this year, because Arvid Henriksson isn't there anymore.
Yeah, no, of course. He's our best defender.
He's an AHL player.
On the other hand, guys. Let's face it. I spoke with Adam as well, and I've overheard some others because some others took my questions, obviously, but I've overheard some of the other questions. And it's funny because, let me get this name right. Anthony Marcotte just spoken to Rob Romage and saying he was in Sweden, but Adam, after the exit of the playoffs, said, no one has been here. No one has asked me anything. And obviously the other guys didn't even know that he was drafted in Montreal. You would assume a journalist would know how elite prospect works. But he knows he's working. He's staying in Sweden for next year. He was quite clear of that. He obviously follows Montreal because he's told me off the record or when the microphone wasn't on, really, that, well, I'm not going to be able to take a spot on that roster next year. So I'll have to work here another year. And he seems really, really happy to do that. I think it's a very good choice of him. I hope that Montreal doesn't bring him over for rookie camp and the main camp, but rather let him stay, come over to development camp, go back home, work your ass off.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, but there's so many risks involved there. We saw it with Norlander, we saw it with Heinemann. Like, when you have a prospect of rookie camp and then training camp, first, they're not training with their team. They're not solidifying their place in the lineup, and they have to earn it on the way back. And, you know, with Norlander, it was this issue where he didn't get the power play time that he deserved because other guys were there the entire preseason and were able to earn their way up, and they developed chemistry with their line mates. So, you know, same thing with Heinemann, who got injured. You know, there's a lot of risks involved in that. So I think it's a lot better to leave your European prospects overseas and maybe to hire a European correspondent who can check in with them, you know, daily or weekly in Europe, you know, either by video or you know, in person if they can, and just have them work on that.
That's what we did, Eisner Prize, hiring Patrick.
Actually, you hired Anton as well, or he's just...
I said Patrick and Anton too.
Anton lied on his resume. We all know Anton lied on his resume.
Nobody really knows how
he never actually did.
Exactly. Nobody really knows how I came in here. And just one day I was there.
Or who you are, really.
Yeah.
He's Nick Bobrov.
I met someone that tells me he's Anton, but I'm not sure who he is.
No, exactly.
He could be Justin, for all we know.
Yeah,
exactly. I could be.
All right. We're going to move on to the... I'll give a small shout out, though, to Kapanen. I know I'm always harsh on him. He had a good finish of the regular season.
Finish.
But was
hilarious.
Was not really that prominent in those seven games against Pelicans, where he only had an assist. I'll still see him as a Vademo player, maybe with a better shot, but smaller in stature. And I think I think we have to wait until he comes over to Laval in order to fully evaluate him. He's going to stay, obviously, in Kalpa next year as well. He signed a new contract during the World Juniors. So we're aware anyway, and it'll be interesting to see. We're going to AHL, obviously, and we got Patrick Dubé as the player of the month. And I'm going to leave that to the expert that is Jared Book.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny because I'm sure a lot of people are like, who in the world is Pierrick Dubé? And the answer to that is a player who has really come out of nowhere. Not come out of nowhere, but has really established himself and taking the opportunity because, let's face it, half of the Rockets' top six, if not more, are in Montreal right now.
So, and a legend of the Cataract de Chamonix, so important to note.
Yeah, no, he's one of those guys that is really a success story of the three-tier program. Last year, Peter Abbandonato was the same thing. He really, you know, the last year Abbandonato started the year in the ECHL, and once he got to Laval, he there was not even a thought of him going down. And Pierrick Dubé is the same thing. He got sent down a couple of times after starting the year in Laval, and really just was really good for the Rocket. And you know, he's scoring big goals, he's getting good minutes, and you know, if it wasn't for him and Joel Teasdale, the Rocket would not even be close to a playoff spot right now. And he had 3 points in the last game against Manitoba on Tuesday. And so he's just really embracing the opportunity and becoming an AHL player. And we've seen players who have, you know, turned that into more than just an AHL contract even. You know, you look at guys like Corey Schooneman and, you know, there's Alex Belzil is another example of that, of a guy who started on an AHL contract and ended up getting an NHL deal down the road. And
he also has the advantage of just being, he just turned 22. So yeah, he's still young. Really
he's
young.
Yeah. You know, he played junior hockey with a lot of guys that are still in junior hockey. You know, guys like Maverick Bork and Xavier Bourgo, like he was on that same team as those guys. And those guys are still, you know, in junior or just starting their pro careers. So it's definitely a player who to watch, I think, going forward in this organization and a real success story for that three-tier system. This is what you want from that system, is to, you know, give guys that maybe aren't worth an NHL contract and maybe not even worth getting AHL playing time right away, but you have that ECHL team that you can send guys to. They're still in Quebec and they can get playing time and develop. And that's what he's done. And I think it'd be very interesting to watch him, you know, going forward, because there's going to be opportunities for players like that. And, you know, Peter Abbandonato mentioned that, you know, he was invited to Canadiens training camp this year. And he was for the first time he got to, you know, see coach Martin Saint-Louis, because obviously when Saint-Louis was hired, he was in Laval last year. And he said that, you know, Saint-Louis went to the AHL guys and told them, like, listen, I didn't make the NHL until I was, you know, it was 25, 26 full time. And I think that really resonated with a lot of these players, like Dubé, who is, you know, 22, and Abbandonato, who's still young as well. He's, you know, he's a few years.
So what you're saying now is that Peter Abbandonato is the second coming of Martin Saint-Louis?
Oh, absolutely.
I think that there's a better chance of that happening than, say, if I was the next Martin Saint-Louis. a lot of the talk about the Rocket going into the season, especially when the Ghoulies and the Harrises and the Slavkovskis were staying in the NHL, was like, oh, there's no prospects in Laval, right? That's something that we heard, you know, on social media, and you know, and interest with the Rocket was kind of low to start the year. But you look at it now, and Jesse Ullinen, Raphael Harvey-Pinard, Justin Barron, those are all guys that have come to the NHL and really established themselves as NHL players, and you need that. I'm not saying that, you know, Rafael Harvey-Pernard is going to be a key player when this team is a contender. But odds are he'll probably be in the middle six or bottom six of this Canadiens team when they're in the playoffs. And you need, if you can get guys like that through your organization, as opposed to, you know, trading things for, you know, fourth liners, Steve Ott and Dwight King and those groups of players, Andreas Martensson, instead of trading for them or signing them to contracts like, you know, Nick Delorier, if you can develop those guys, it helps you pay the guys that, that really make a difference, right? Like, you know, getting those guys on entry-level contracts. And, you know, I think that there's something to be said for developing those guys in-house and getting them to know part of the group. And, you know, like Harvey-Pernard and Suzuki go back to Vegas rookie camp, you know, like development camp. You know, Harvey-Pernard was an invite to that camp when Suzuki was still a Golden Knights prospect. And there's value in that. There's value in these guys learning how to play together. And you know, there's so many people on this team and this organization who are young. And next year, it's going to get even crazier because you're going to have guys like Joshua Waugh and Riley Kidney and Logan Mailloux and, you know, Heinemann's probably going to be here for the whole year. There's so many guys that are going to start coming in. They're all going to be around the same age and they're all just going to play together, whether it's in the NHL or the AHL. And that's how you build winners. I mean, you look at up and down contenders in the NHL. And on most of those teams, you have guys who played in the AHL together and did well, whether it's, you know, Tampa Bay or even Colorado. You know, Dallas is starting to see that with their AHL team success as well. So it's something that's going to be very interesting to watch as we get forward, because not everyone's going to be a top prospect. But as you get and as you focus on development and, you know, bubble guys become actual NHLers, that gives you a lot more options. And that also gives you a lot more opportunity to make trades. Like, look at Tampa, right? They traded guys like Boris Kachuk and Taylor Radish and, you know, Cal Foot and all these guys that didn't have room in the NHL for them or were replaceable because they had other guys to step in for them. And they end up getting good players back for them. So I think that there's a lot of value in that, and even Toronto is an example of that as well, where they, you know, trade guys for other guys and kind of,
well, that Sundin trade really looks hilarious at the moment.
Well, I'm not saying that it's foolproof. There's Kyle Dubas has done some weird things, but I think that there's they're a good example of what happens when you develop, and I think that there's, you know, there's some wins there, and you know, they haven't really seen the fruits of all of it because some of the guys, you know, have been traded, or, you know, like even Carter Verhaeghe was in the Tampa Bay organization, and he's, you know, scoring lots of NHL goals now. So I think that, you know, Tampa Bay is really the blueprint, and I don't think it's a complete coincidence that some of the big people in the Canadiens organization now, and I look at, you know, obviously Vincent Lecavalier and Martin St. Louis come straight from the Tampa organization, because that they've been doing it for a long time before Steve Yzerman, after Steve Yzerman. There's a lot of consistencies there. And I think that, there's not going to be room for all these guys. You know,
that's a subject for another podcast. Yeah, absolutely. Now you're going off tangent again. And Matt,
I am.
I'm going to leave you to break in because you are the champion of the bottom 6 minutes. Mike Madison, a little bit of a surprise when we selected him, but numbers stood out. He's been solid for those times. He's been on the ice all over the season. Why did we pick him?
Well, you know, I mentioned it with Lane Hutson. Me and Hattie kind of talked about it, right? If Lane Hutson stepped into the league tomorrow, if the only thing that he could do was just transition with the puck, he'd probably be a top pairing defenseman. Well, Mike Matheson does it all, right? I think there's still a couple of issues with him in his own zone. But realistically, I think once this team actually improves around him, he's going to be a legitimate top pairing defenseman for this team. I mean, just the way that he's able to carry the puck up ice with ease, his skating is magnificent. He had, 14 points in the month of March on a team that was, you know, I don't think they were necessarily horribly lacking in terms of scoring, but they weren't blowing anybody's doors off offensively. What he's been able to do on a team that has been decimated by injuries is nothing short of astonishing. I wrote an article, maybe a couple weeks before the deadline, where I said, you know, maybe he's playing himself into the deadline conversation. And then I got a lot of DMs and emails from people that are like, what are you talking about, Matt? Why are you trying to trade Mike Matheson? And I was never trying to trade him. I was saying, look at how well he's playing. If anybody's bound to be getting interest from other teams right now ahead of the deadline, it's probably Mike Matheson. Let's face it. If you were calling up the Montreal Canadiens prior to that deadline, you're not going to be starting with Joel Edmondson as the player that you're interested in. If you're watching the Montreal Canadiens, the one guy that really stood out as playing extremely well is Mike Matheson. And I think with the way he's played at this point, he's making himself invaluable to this franchise because they're going to have to keep around at least one or two veterans to help with some of those young players that Jared brought up. Right? You're not going to be able to run a defense next year where your most tenured guy is Arbor Jacki or Caden Gooley. Nothing against either of those guys, but they can't be the most tenured person on your blue line. And Mike Matheson has shown so far that he could do wonders for this team, particularly in terms of mentoring some of those younger defensemen who really like to develop their offensive game a little bit, like Caden Gooley or like Logan Mailloux, if he happens to come up next year. I don't think he's going to make the NHL, but either way, having Mike Matheson around is going to be able to help some of those guys develop their offensive game a little bit. They can really learn from him how he's getting it done and maybe take some of those things on in their own game. I really think the Habs nailed it with that trade. And I think this last month worth of hockey is the proof in the pudding right there when it comes to Mike Matheson. He's been playing great, and I can't wait to see what he does next year if this team can get a little bit better and healthier around him.
I mean, he's also signed until 2026, which is perfect for a developmental team to just know that the guy who's playing like the number one defenseman right now is actually the longest, well, the guy who's signed for the longest term as well.
As opposed to what? If it was Carey Price and Shea Weber?
Yeah, well, they were a little bit older as well during the last few years. It's just like, I mean, Mike Matheson has had a great, like, really, like, he broke through really well in at Pittsburgh last year, but then he's found yet another level this year. And basically, like, both Joel Edmondson and David Savard were signed to be those steady guys who can rely on, but they offer little to nothing when it comes to offensive display. Mike Matheson can do a little bit of everything, which means that he's more deployable in different scenarios and everything. So the fact that he's signed longer than Savard and Edmondson is a good thing going forward.
Oh, absolutely. Like Mike, I feel like a lot of people are like, okay, like there was a lot of uncertainty when the trade was made.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was because, you know, Jeff Petrie is also really good, but I think that the Canadians really knew what they were doing in this trade. Like, I just feel like he's really the perfect guy to be in this situation. He's 29 years old. He's signed long term.
He's homegrown.
He's from the area, and I think what you're seeing with this organization is that there's a lot of players who just really like being Montreal Canadiens.
Mm.
And, yeah. You know, I don't want to mention a certain player in Winnipeg who is rumored to also want to play in Montreal. But I think that there's a lot to
Mark
be said
Scheifele?
For that. That's a whole nother issue. Don't tell Jake Evans about that. But in terms of that, I think that there's something to be said for players who want to be Montreal Canadiens. And there's a lot of things about, you know, local players and, you know, whether they're born in Quebec, but I think that there's something to be said, and Brendan Gallagher talked about this, is players who just want to be Montreal Canadiens and know what it means to be Montreal Canadiens. And I think that, you know, Nick Suzuki lives in the city all year round, like, and I think that that's a trend that's gonna start to develop a little bit more, because, you know, a lot of these players are young and, you know, they haven't really established their roots. And to have a guy like Mike Matheson, you know, who's pretty much perfectly bilingual as well, it really is interesting. And him stepping up the way he has really helped this team not have Caden Gooley, not have Arbor Jacki, not have a lot of players who have been hurt both on at forward and on defense. And, you know, he's I get tired of people who say like, oh, they're winning games because of older players. Like Mike Matheson and Samuel Montembeault are pieces of this future. Like they're not the as big parts of the future as like Cole Caulfield and Juraj Slafkovský and Nick Suzuki and the players like that. But like only 29, like Montembeault is what, 25, 26? Like in 3-4 years when this team is ready to contend, they'll probably still be Montreal Canadiens and key parts of it. Like they're not getting a number one goalie who's going to play 60, 70 games a year. So whoever your backup is, and I think it's probably going to be Montembeault going forward at worst as a backup, but at 1A, 1B, you can do a lot worse than that. And I think that that's something to look into. Like the pieces of this future are not just the top prospects who are 22 years old.
No, but then, I think
we have to adjust that.
That was the problem a few years ago when your key players were Shea Weber and Carey Price, who both were like 34, 35 coming up there in age. And you know mm-hmm. that, well, this was a young team coming up there. We were going to have a reset or rebuild or whatever. And how old are those players going to be when the team is ready to compete again? And now, like, you know, I think it's pretty much just Habs fans being kind of, no, like they're used to the fact that
Habs fans being defeatist. Yeah.
No, but also that the older players lead the team, but the older players right now aren't that old. Like the older right. guys are guys like Mike Hoffman, Joel Edmondson, David Savard, who don't have very long contracts, so they will be out the door in a couple of years.
And as usual, when Jared starts talking, we're ending up somewhere else. We need to have him have his own podcast instead.
I've missed this. I need to talk more about hockey. I think that's what we've learned on this podcast. Don't get me started, because I also did this with Andrew Berkshire. A game over. It was like a 90-minute episode.
Mike Matheson. We mentioned it. We've spoken about it. As a going forward, as a leader on the team, as a role model for the players coming up, and especially with this young defensive crowd, where we also have, as mentioned, Logan Mayo, we got Lane Hudson and Adam Engström, who is future on this list. It will be interesting, and they will need someone to maybe not teach them being pros, but teach them being pros in the NHL. Because that is a different thing. We hear it from European players when they come over as well. It is a little bit different, and including sitting in the stands and being left out of the roster for a game or two. You've been listening to, and I'm going to get this right, Hadi Kalakesh, Matt Drake, Anton Rosegård, Jared Book, and myself, Patrick Bexell. We're super happy to be on the new website, the new platform. And we're super happy to have you around for another, 15 years. Thank you guys for listening.
And I just want to, I know I've talked a lot, but this is on topic, I swear.
It's not that it's on topic. It's more the fact that where it ends up, not being on
it's
topic.
Okay. It's okay. No, it's going to stay on topic. I promise. You mentioned the new website. We also have a new podcast partner, the Fans First Sports Network. And they're helping us a lot with the podcast and distribution stuff. So we're giving them a shout out as well. We're gonna have more podcasts because I need to talk more about hockey and stay on topic.
and shout out to Joshua Hawaii, who had 27 points in 11 games in the month of March, and probably was right up there with Lane Hudson. Absolutely. Want to throw that out there.
I just had to include Lane Hudson instead of him just because of the sheer quantity of awards that he's just added to his name. It's just insane.
And being left out.
I'm not complaining. I just got to plug my boy whenever I get a chance.
Oh, for sure. 100%.
So I'm going to try to finish this podcast again. All
not my fault. Let the record show, it's not Jared's fault.